Welcome to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. This podcast explores what it means to make life less difficult for each other and for ourselves. We share stories of struggles and successes because we believe sharing our stories eases the difficulty of life. I'm Lisa Tilstra, your host. Let's jump into today's conversation. My guest today is Laura Beringer. Laura is passionate about living an authentic, values-driven life and continuously figuring out what that means and how to do it. She's a former executive and strategy advisor in the global health, adolescence, and gender fields, and recently opened the first African branch of an NGO managing a multi-million dollar adolescent health program. Laura now works as a social impact and startup advisor with a focus on East Africa, as well as running her own coaching practice, focusing on helping others find alignment in international work and living environments, as well as helping entrepreneurs and small business owners really get their footing and grow their business. Laura has lived in the U.S., Central America, Africa, Europe, and home is now Utrecht in the Netherlands, where she lives with her husband, two kids, and a dog. She loves the outdoors, running, yoga, and home design. Laura and I first connected through coaching a couple of years ago, and it is such a delight to reconnect with her in this conversation. Laura, thank you so much for your willingness to share these pieces of your story and journey. Thank you for sharing your insights, reflections, and wisdom. And thank you so much for investing in others, helping them find their center and grounding in a way of life that often lacks stability. What you do makes life less difficult. Laura, welcome to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It is so cool to get to sit down with you, and we can kind of go in a little bit more detail as we hear more of your story about how we met. But we met through coaching, and you were living in Rwanda, and now you're in the Netherlands, and there's like so much to talk about, but it just feels really, really special to reconnect with you in this moment.
Oh, me too. I'm so happy for the opportunity.
So I'm going to control myself and keep myself focused on my very first question. I have one standard question I ask all of my guests, and it's around the idea of making life less difficult. The name of the podcast, This Work That I Do, comes from a quote by Marianne Evans. What do we live for if not to make life less difficult for each other? And I would love to hear, what does that mean for you?
That's a good question. I think it's a couple things. I think the first is really trying to just give myself grace and space for the decisions that I have made in the past that maybe didn't work out as I would have wanted, that I make in the future, that I make in the moment. So just really just trying to be kind to myself about where I am in life, if I'm not where I thought I would be or necessarily where I want to go. And that's really hard to do. But I think the reminder of that is helpful. So I think it's just kind of this constant reminder to be kinder and gentler to myself. It's probably the big one. I think some other more recent things that have helped make life just a little bit less difficult is really trying to move forward with intentionality and my life, and really kind of think about where I am and how I want to go forward, and just kind of taking it day by day, which is probably the same theme as being kind to myself, but feels a little bit different. So those are probably the big ones on a global scale.
And there's so much wisdom there. I actually feel my shoulders relax as you are describing about just being kind to yourself. And, you know, like some decisions we make don't turn out the way that we envision them. And okay, how can I be kind to myself during those times? Like, it's really powerful.
Yeah. Just kinder all the time. Mm-hmm. Right. Nobody ever says, oh, I was too kind to myself in that moment. Right. That just doesn't happen. So, so why are we so hard on ourselves all the time? And yeah, again, like I'm not great at it, but trying to be better.
developing that muscle. It's like, I kind of think about it, it's like a muscle. You got to strengthen it and 100%. Practice.
Yeah.
So Laura, there's so much. I think, let me ask you this question and just see what it opens up, and then we can explore from there. But I'm curious, you have so many different experiences. You've lived so many different places, done different work. So my question is, when you think back and you kind of scan back on your life and you think about a time that really stands out, that you looked around and you thought, oh, wow, life is hard, harder than I thought it was going to be. What comes to mind for you?
There are a lot of moments, but I think probably the most recent one is the one that has impacted the way I view myself and the way I view my life the most, and the one that you helped me work through at my last job, which was essentially a job that I had worked my whole career towards, right? It was kind of like, this is the job that I want, right? I had spent, 15 plus years in global health. I was living in Rwanda. I was doing this job that was like the job, right? And I was like, this is the job that's going to finally kind of, get me to where I want to go and kind of put me in the world that I want to be in. And then it didn't work out, right? For a lot of reasons, it just didn't work out. And I think there's a lot that I really learned from that. I think one was that too much of my identity was wrapped up in the success of that job. So when that job, went away, or when I left, when I left that job, I didn't know who I was anymore. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to untie myself from that role. And so much of my self-worth and my place in the world was tied to that role. Not necessarily because of the role, but because of the world that role was in and where, what I would be able to do, and so when that went away, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I would do after not being in like a quote important job. And that was really hard. So it was really hard to be in that role, and it was really hard to leave the role. Mm. Probably one of the hardest places for me, because there was so much identity wrapped into that, where previous times have definitely been difficult, but more from like a 20 or 30 year old soul searching, like, what am I, what am I doing, versus this, where I really felt like I had landed. And then all of a sudden I was completely unlanded in many ways.
Yeah. It's incredibly difficult, especially, as you described, like working towards something for years of your life and, being really intentional about, okay, here's what I want to do, and here's what will be fulfilling. And then to have it not turn out like that, it just, disruptive is the word that comes to mind for me. Like, it just sounds incredibly disruptive.
Yeah, it was. It caused a total rethinking of so many things, from my upbringing, right? And having been raised in this family of parents who were very integrated into kind of the nonprofit world and community world, right? And so I really was like, well, that's what I need to be doing, right? Like, that was my upbringing. And that was kind of my view, was like, this is where I belong. This is where I should be, right? So it was everything from rethinking that to, I did all this studying, I did all this work in this field. Now what, how will I feel like I have purpose? How will I feel important if I don't have like a job that is on that track?
Yeah.
Right. And so it was a lot of trying to reshift where I got that feeling of self-worth from, right? Mm-hmm. The self-worth doesn't, at the end of the day, come from the outside world, from a job title, from people telling you they like what you do, from, large agencies saying this work is important, right? It comes from within, but actually getting it to come from within and actually feeling that is so hard.
Yeah.
Right. So it caused like a total, right? And I'm not, I'm not there yet, but I do find now that having disconnected from that world, having really shifted, moved out of the NGO world, moved into a different space, really thought about what is my purpose? Why do I want to be here? What do I want for my family, for myself? Right. I feel like is more putting me on the track of actually being able to define my own self-worth and not letting the outside world cause such a roller coaster for me emotionally, if that makes sense.
It makes, right. Yes, it makes a lot of sense, Laura. Like, total sense. But
it's so hard. It's so hard. And I don't claim to be an expert on it, but I'm trying.
We're on the journey. We're all on the journey.
We're all on the journey. Yeah. And I think that's part of it too, is really, you know, everyone says it's a journey, but it really is a journey. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think being real, you know, all of this stuff that I used to think was so silly around gratitude and meditation, and, you know, I don't do it every day, but I do understand how helpful it is now, mm-hmm. in a way that I used to be like, oh, you know, phooey. Now I'm like, oh, I get it. Okay. Yes. I like this. I like this appreciation of every day, because you don't know how long you're going to be here. And I think that's been a huge shift for me, is like, hopefully I have more than half of my life left, but I might not. And, you know, as Glennon Doyle says, you have this one precious life. What do I want to do with it? And I'm not a religious person, but that framing, I think, has been really helpful for me in what has now been 2 years since I left that role, and I'm still working through it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I was having some conversations over the last few days, and end of life issues, death and dying were coming up, and it's a very heavy topic. And yet it just resonates what you're saying of like, hopefully I have more than half my life ahead of me still, but what if I don't? And with this one precious life, like, what do I want to do with it? And I mean, I think for me, at least, looking at life through this lens of life is fragile. You know, too many people I know and love have, their lives have ended way sooner than they should have. And I don't have any amount of time guaranteed, right? And it helps me live more fully in the present. And yeah, so
it really has. Yeah. And I think since having 2 kids as well, like, I've definitely thought a lot more about death. But, you know, and my oldest is now 9 and a half. So that's not new, but there is a new shift in terms of, oh, rather than being scared of this thing that might happen, the framing is now, I need to just really make sure that I'm living a life that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And that I understand what brings me joy and what my values are and how I want to do it on a day-to-day basis. And if something isn't working for me, I need to change it. But, you know, and as you know, my confidence was totally destroyed after, you know, my last role. And so there's been a lot of rebuilding confidence. Mm-hmm. But part of that is, oh, I can do something different, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, like, I am good at other things besides this field that I, you know, used to be in and still, you know, would love to kind of have a foot in it. But I do have skills to offer that are other things, and that's, you know, and that's okay. Yeah. And kind of giving confidence in that world as well.
Yeah. Laura, there's so many different thoughts coming up for me, and I'm going to go this direction just because I have various faces coming to mind in my own mind of people and conversations that I've had, going back to this idea of having your identity really attached to your work. And in the nonprofit world, the international development world, it is, people typically get into the type of career that you were in because of having huge hearts, wanting to help, wanting to make life less difficult for others. And it can be a really surprisingly harsh world. And also I also know people who work in for-profit corporations and government and all sorts of, and so there's something about humans and our work where our identity can really be wrapped up in it. And it can be incredibly difficult when things don't work out, right? And so I don't have a really specific question here, but I would love to just hear you share a little bit more about your journey and your thoughts on the identity and processing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that helped, and I will try to be as concise and articulate as possible, were some of my feelings around the ethics of being a white North American working in a less developed country in a leadership role. And I no longer felt like it was appropriate for me to be in that world and in that role. And so if I couldn't find a way to essentially phase myself out, then it was time for me to go. Mm. And so that did actually really help, I think, some of the identity shifting, or at least getting out of the role and kind of getting out of the field, was this feeling of, I don't like fundraising. And that's probably the only role that would make sense for me, you know, in Europe or in North America. And I don't like that. And therefore, I don't think this is a world that I can work in anymore. On top of feeling like there is a place for NGO funding, but I actually think that sustainable businesses are probably something that needs to grow in many of these countries. And so that might be a better place for me to offer my my experience and work in. And so I think that certainly helped the identity shift, was this feeling of like, oh, I actually think this is not ethically, I don't think this is a place where I can be. And I think there might be another avenue that makes a little bit more sense, mm-hmm. Where I can kind of be of value. So that was one piece. I think the other piece was really seeing how unhealthy it was for me to be so tied up and how much power I was giving other people mm-hmm. over how I felt about myself. Because mm-hmm. when I tied so much of myself into my job, other people's assessments of how I was doing or what was happening or would really impact me so strongly in a way that wasn't healthy anymore. And so I was giving them so much control over me. And that was really causing a huge detriment to my mental health. And because I, you know, didn't run my own business or I didn't have my own thing, right? I didn't feel in control. And so that was part of it, was like, this isn't going to work in the long term. Like, this is making me miserable, and realizing that it was for a larger reason than just, oh, this, you know, this isn't a great place for me to be. It was really a larger, when I'm in a job like this, I'm not the kind of person who can, these things can just roll off of, and I can still feel confident. Like, I am actually highly impacted, and I need to work on my confidence, and I need to work on feeling good about myself without other people telling me I'm good. Because when I only base it extrinsically, then if something happens, I crumble, and that's not helpful, and that's not a good place to be. Mm-hmm. And that was a really hard realization. It took a lot of therapy and chats with my spouse to really get to a place where I realized yes, like, I could have done things differently, and this is a thing that I need to work on, mm-hmm. and this is probably not the healthiest place for me to be, and I need to figure out how do I operate with more confidence in the world so that these little bumps don't impact me as much as they have.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. There's so much insight and wisdom in what you're sharing, and I'm just noticing how you are describing that shift from the external feedback and measuring your own value and success and worth from the external sources and stepping away from that, or even just, first of all, recognizing that it's reality. Like, that in and of itself is hard, because it seems pretty easy to get to be in that spot. Like, it's not, that seems to be more of like the natural go-to for us as humans to, yes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we're social people, right? We like that makes us feel like we belong, right? But if there's too much of it, if that's the only source, then it ends up having too much power over you as an individual. And then you don't know. Like, I wouldn't have been able to articulate my purpose a few years ago, right? And now I can. So when things don't go well, I can shift and pivot more easily than I could have before. But before, because the field and, you know, doing things that were interesting and more challenging, which required professional growth, that was such my focus, right? There's only one route to that. But now, because I feel like I can articulate my purpose and what I'm doing and what my values are, I can pivot more easily. And yeah, I might not have like a huge company, right? No one's going to know who I am, you know, in the world on any sort of grand scale, but I feel better because I know why I'm doing the things that I'm doing. And I am a better parent. I'm a better spouse. I'm a better person to work with because I feel like I know why I'm doing the things that they do. And they really give me pleasure and value and meaning. Right. And so it's going to take me another couple of years to really, you know, to really solidify whatever this next phase that I'm in is. But I feel like I have focus doing it in a way that gives me a lot of joy and meaning.
And I think that's really, it really stands out how you're talking about pivoting and having more clarity for yourself of your purpose, your values to, because there's always going to be those external voices, those external people in our life that have opinions about who we are and what we're doing. And so to recognize and hear them. And sometimes people, I know in my experience, people with who love me and have really good intent, still their external perspective, like it's not super helpful. And so to recognize it and then pivot back to what's aligned for me as a person, there's a lot there.
Yeah. And there's so much work that goes into being able to do that, right? Like, I think I can do it in some parts of my life and others are more challenging, but it's kind of the general idea of just knowing your boundaries, knowing what's healthy for you, what's not healthy for you. Sorry, let me turn off my chat. Yeah, it's just, there's so much work and you can do the work or not do the work, but I think at the end of the day, for me, it's been helpful to do the work and figure out what are my boundaries, what is good for me. When something happens that isn't good for me, I'm able to articulate that's not good for me, right? And you have to teach people, professional or personal, you have to teach people how you want to be interacted with. And when you're changing the way that you're used to operating, right, you have to, that's going to surprise people at first. And so having that, it kind of builds your confidence to be like, oh no, this actually, I've laid my boundary and that actually makes me feel better, whether it's personal or professional. And so I'm going to continue doing this because I now understand what I want and how I want it. And I'm going to be kind in laying my boundary, but this is a new way of operating and a new way of how I want to be treated.
Yeah. Would you be willing to share a little bit more about your journey from noticing, because it seems like there's a time where you started to notice, hey, I've got these external voices. They are not helping. I've really lost my confidence. I'm, you know, life is not, work is not what I thought mm-hmm. it was going to be. And then stepping into the journey of, I mean, even just with what you just articulated, I think it's incredibly powerful and also really difficult to say, I'm going to set boundaries kindly. I'm going to treat people I'm going to teach people how to treat me. It's one thing to say it, but I think there's so much there. So I'm curious. I mean, feel free to take it in any direction, but I'd love to hear more about your journey and how this process has unfolded and perhaps is still unfolding.
Of living my boundaries. Process of living my boundaries is still unfolding. Okay, I think part of it was realizing that I had no real boundaries and that I needed boundaries. And
can I ask about that too? I mean, because I think it's relevant, and I appreciate you just saying, like, realizing I had no boundaries. How did you even come to that realization?
How did I come to that realization? I think one, I have a spouse who's been telling me for years that I kind of give, that I do too much, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that has been a slow realization in the sense that, I remember some moments in graduate school where we were talking about a project and somebody would say something and I'd be like, okay, that needs to be done, right? It was almost like anything that anybody mentioned that was a problem, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to solve it. Mm. It's like, well, no one asked you to solve that problem, right? No one said, you didn't agree. And so then I would find myself, we'd be going down this road and I'd be working on this thing super hard. And then nobody would care about it because we hadn't actually agreed that that was a problem that was worth solving. I was just like, oh, I hear all these problems now, and we'll even do that now with the kids will say something and I'll be like, oh, okay. And I'll instantly start researching like, oh, this is how, you need to do this. And my husband's like, not everything needs like the best solution ever. Right. And so I think it's like lots of like, somebody in my life being like, hey, like that is completely unnecessary what you're doing. And I'm like, no, everything, and as my therapist would say, right, it's like unrelenting high standards of like everything needs to be solved perfectly right now. It needs to be done to the highest standards possible. Right. So whether it's my kid wanting to do a craft project or whether it's, a project at grad school or something at work, right? It's kind of this like, oh yeah, I guess not everything needs to be solved. So a lot of it is just like taking a step back and like having that conversation of like, okay, is this something we want to solve or is this something that actually needs to be solutioned?
Yeah. So
I think it was little things like that, which helped me gain self-awareness that my personality is to kind of the people pleasing side of me is solutionizing for those around me and making things easier for those around me. Mm. So that was definitely part of it. I think another part of it was, I'm trying to think about how to say this, but I think because in this role that I left, I really second guessed who I was and what I stood for and kind of let values that weren't mine dictate how I operated. Mm. And so when I came out of that role and was just so destroyed, right? It just took me months to even feel like I could do anything. There was a piece of, okay, what happened and how do I not have this happen again?
Yeah.
And it really did kind of take reaching bottom there to say, okay, I see how this happened. This is basically a pattern that I have fallen into in previous places. Mm. This is kind of the biggest that this has ever happened and it needs to not happen again because it has completely destroyed me. And one of the reasons why it happened is because of the second guessing of myself and what I stood for. And also being the supporter of my family, having moved my family to a different country for this role. In previous roles, I would just leave. Right. Mm. 6-12 months in, I'd be like, this is not working for me. I'm just going to leave. But I didn't want to because there was a lot of really good in the job that I really, really loved. And then also because we were tied there because of me and I felt like I needed to see it out. Mm. And yeah, so that I think that rock bottom in many ways woke me up to what happens when I don't when I can't articulate my boundaries and what's good for me. And that has spread into lots of other parts of my life, you know, in this next phase. And so I'm now entering into a, you know, a new business venture with a friend or a, you know, a co-founder. And I'm really, you know, we're doing a really good job. We're really aligned on a lot of things, and we're doing a really good job of being super transparent in terms of how we like to work together. And when something bothers me, I'm trying to really practice saying it then in the moment. Yeah. Because I think we're really great partners, and I want us to get on this new foundation, but trying to practice it now is super hard. I'm like, catching.
There's no magic wand that you've.
I know. Laura. I wish there was. I wish there was a magic wand.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's really this idea that we all develop these defense mechanisms in our life, right? We all have ways of dealing with the stuff of our life, and it will manifest itself in different ways. And I'm trying to have it be a tool for growth as opposed to manifesting in a more destructive way, which I think is what it did in the past, right? We're all dealing with it somehow. Are we dealing with it positively or in a way that's self-destructive?
Very, yeah, very well said. Thank you so much for sharing that. And one of the themes that stands out to me as you're sharing is really a sense of taking personal responsibility and saying, oh, actually, I can do some things to adjust and, you know, change myself and choose different patterns and recognizing that pattern. And it's really difficult, right? It's so much easier to point the finger and blame it on someone else and different things going back to the external world. But it really stands out to me how much you were willing to just own your journey, own the challenges, own where you were, and then say, I want to do something about this. I want to change some things.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. I mean, for me, there's really no other way. One of the things I did really early on when I left my old job was do a values exercise. Cause I was like, okay, I think this might be one of the things that will help me not land here again. Like if I feel mm-hmm. myself starting to go, if I have my values written and I can refer back to them in, you know, 6 or 12 months time, that might help serve as kind of a wake up of like, you know, what you're doing. And one of my core values was authenticity, was really, you know, everyone being authentic around me living my life, you know, authentically. And that's just been, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I've hopped around jobs a lot. You know, if something doesn't work for me, I can't stick it out if it doesn't feel right. And, you know, and so I think for the next couple of years, I'm not going to work for other people. I'm going to work with other people because that helps me live my life in the most authentic way. I'm a terrible politics player. I'm a terrible game player. And that just means that there are certain worlds where I won't be able to operate in. It's just not for me.
Well, and I would just say too, that awareness, it's not that you couldn't operate in those worlds. It's that you're actively choosing not to, because that's not aligned with who you are.
Right. And I am comfortable now saying that's not who I am, where I was not comfortable. I think I thought I would be able to do it. I was like, oh, if I just do this, I'll be able to do it and I'll be fine. Or if I just do this, I'll be able to do it and I'll be fine. But I'm not. And, you know, and so that also means, you know, there will be trade-offs. I probably won't make a crazy amount of money in my life, right? Because I won't be in the worlds where that crazy amount of money exists. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. Right. But there are trade-offs to everything. And I think it's really easy to get stuck in the momentum of life. And I was really grateful actually for this opportunity that made me stopped the momentum very abruptly. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually very grateful for it because it gave me this period that I think really sets up the next half of my life. Mm. In a way that's been super fun and I think is much healthier.
That's really cool. It's really cool. And also, I mean, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge it was also a really difficult time. And I think this is often like how life unfolds, right? Where there's something that you made a choice, you moved your family to Rwanda, you found this perfect job, and then it kind of imploded, and it has led to amazing growth and this journey that you're on and you're identifying as being really grateful for. And also I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the challenge in that, because I know in my own life and in talking with other people, oftentimes in the moment of the implosion, when life is not going as we want, it's really difficult to see, oh, that this can actually lead me to some really beautiful places. Yeah,
it is really hard. Because irrationally, you know, it will be fine, right? But in the moment, or in the many moments afterwards, it's really hard. It'd been challenging. I don't know if I ever really felt like I fit in the NGO public health world. And so I think part of it was this realization of, oh, this really isn't for me in many ways. Like it wasn't a world that was very accepting to my very eclectic background of having done like lots of different things along the way. It felt like a world that really wanted you to have a very clear path that had lots of building blocks. And I like to do lots of different things. I like to be scrappy. I like to, you know, start things from scratch and figure, you know, I'm a solutionizer. I like to find all of the solutions, and I like to be in a place where that's what's wanted. So I think I bounced around a lot because I was trying to find my place, where I don't know if I ever really had a place in that world. And so this was a blessing in disguise, but it's when you're in the moment, that's really hard. It's really hard to see, because you have to do all this work. You have to do all the work to figure out, what is your purpose? What are your values? What are your strengths? What are you good at? You have to rebuild your confidence. You have to like find people. And if you're not like me, if you're somebody who really craves stability in a role, the natural reaction is like, okay, well, what's my next job? Right? Mm-hmm. Where am I going to go? Am I going to find it here? And this phase of self-discovery is not stable by definition.
Yeah.
So it's even harder if you're somebody who doesn't do well with chaos. Right. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thrive in chaos because I like to make plans and I like to make structure of chaos.
Mm.
So I'm like, oh, okay, you know, great. Everything's imploded. I need a couple months to like cry and get myself together. And then I will make structure. I will figure it out. It will be hard. I will cry a lot, but I will figure it out. Versus somebody whose natural reaction is like, okay, well, what's my next job? And then you don't really ever have to do the work because you just go into your next job and you're like, everything's fine. It's all good. And then over time you realize like, oh, actually I'm repeating the same patterns in my job. I'm getting burnt out, or I have no boundaries, or I hate this. Right. So either way, at some point you'll have to, if you're one of those people, you'll have to do the work.
Yes.
But doing the work is super hard.
Really hard. What, if you were to describe what it is that has, I mean, this, how do you described yourself a couple of different ways, a solutionizer, scrappy, like there were a couple of great adjectives there, but like, what do you think that has, is that embedded in your personality? Is that, you know, was that demonstrated to you in your time growing up, or where do you think that comes from?
That's a good question. I mean, I think my mom is definitely a scrappy solutionizer as well. I come from a family of entrepreneurs, people who kind of like to do things their own way, right? My mom moved to the US from Italy, you know, and made a life for herself with my dad. And, you know, so there's a lot of scrappiness, you know, embedded in there in the upbringing. like, oh, well, you know, we'll just do it. We'll just do it this way. So that was definitely there. And then I think it was, I'm trying to think of what else. I feel like I've always had a little bit more of a entrepreneurial kind of do it on your own spirit. You know, my closest brother in age is also an entrepreneur. Like, I just think that's just part of the way that we grew up seeing things could work. Mm. Right. So I didn't see parents in this like super stable 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. I saw parents trying to figure it out. And mm-hmm. I think my parents do come from a religious background where there is more of that. You are talking more about that purpose and the meaning. And so I think that played a huge role in it. Yeah. And then I think the rest is just probably feeling like I didn't 100% fit in anywhere that I was. Mm-hmm. And so when you feel like you don't fit, you're probably always looking for where you do fit and wondering why you don't fit. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of different ways that can manifest. And I think for me, there were certainly some unhealthy behaviors in there, but now it's a little bit more soul searching. Yeah.
I'm kind of just resonating with the term scrappy solutionizer. And I feel like there's something there for all of us, right? For each of us to tap into and build that muscle in ourselves to be scrappy solutionizers. Because you know what? Life sometimes throws curveballs at us. And so to feel like, okay, well, when that happens, I can draw on that scrappy solutionizer part of myself. Yeah. There's something that's... that feels good and empowering.
Yeah. I think it's really knowing that you can design your life.
Mm.
Right. And I need to pull a little bit from the calmer people and not always scrappy solutionize everything. I think there needs to be a healthy balance of both.
What do they say? Any strength overdone can become a liability. That sort of thing.
Exactly. Yes. I think my husband would have moments where he says it's a real liability. Yeah, for myself, for my sleep mostly.
Yeah. So, Laura, I would love to hear a little bit about your journey from, you know, we've talked a lot kind of revolving around your time in Rwanda and your work and stepping away from that. And now you live in the Netherlands, which is not your country of origin.
Definitely not.
This was an intentional choice. Wherever you'd be willing to jump in and share, how did you and your family end up in the Netherlands?
I mean, the short answer is a spreadsheet. The long answer is we had been moving around a lot. My kids were both born in DC. We were there for about 2.5 years. I basically moved there when I was 6 months pregnant with my first, and we left when my second was 11 weeks old. So DC was really the place to have children. It's also where I grew up. And I was looking for work at the time, and we were living in New York. And so it was a good place for me to find work. And then we moved to London, and then we moved to Rwanda. And then we were like, okay, our children, we both want stability for our children. And we really wanted stability for ourselves, right? The kids adapt to whatever you present to them. So if you're really happy to move around there, they might have, you know, misgivings about it, but they'll generally be happy. But I think we were really ready to settle somewhere, be able to buy a house. And so there was a lot of intentionality behind this move versus our previous moves had been more for job opportunities. And when we were in DC, we really saw that as a launch pad to leave the US. We had lived out of the US before and then had gone back for grad school and had kids. And so we really knew that the US was not a place we wanted to be long term. As I mentioned, I'm half Italian, and I had spent some of my childhood living in Italy and then again as a young adult. And then I had traveled globally for work in my 20s. And so there was always this feeling of like, we don't want to settle in the US. So the US was out of the question. It was very low on our spreadsheet. And because I have European citizenship, we knew that Europe would be kind of an easy place for us to move. And so there was a lot. So I guess, yeah, there was a lot more intentionality behind this move of like, okay, we want a place where we know we can, you know, unless something terribly goes wrong, we can actually stay through secondary school for the kids. So we're talking like 10, 15 years is what the goal is. And we've never lived in a house for more than 2 years. Wow. So moving somewhere, every city we've lived in, we've always moved twice, right? The longest I ever lived was in New York, and I lived in 3 apartments over 4 years, right? So this idea of like moving somewhere for 10 to 15 years is quite terrifying. But but we also know ourselves well enough to know that if we really hate it, we'll leave, right? Mm-hmm. Or if it's really not working. But I think what that intentionality of a long-term move did was it said, okay, like, let's actually put a lot of thought into where we want to go. And let's try to prioritize places that we already know. So places where we already have a sense of the culture, where we, you know what the schools might look like long-term, where we, you know, have proximity to family and friends. So what we did basically is we took what we valued. So we said, okay, not where will we go to find a good job? It was what kind of life do we want to live? And mm-hmm. Rwanda also taught us a lot about that because, you know, for example, there wasn't a lot of access to like nature in the way that I like to access nature, right? I couldn't just go be alone and walk for a few hours, right? It's so population dense that that's really hard to do. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, particularly when I had left my job and I had a lot of me time, I was like, oh, I was really craving, can I just go for a hike somewhere? Or can I go for a run somewhere that's not, you know, in the middle of a city? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I really realized this is actually really important to me, not being so car dependent. So there were things like that. There was also being close to an airport where we could have a direct flight back to the US, but I also have family in Europe where we could get to family in Europe quickly. You know, the language, you know, is the culture values aligned with us? So there were a lot of those kinds of criteria that together, you know, my husband and I kind of put together, and it was really about what life do we want? And yes, you know, is there a work community? But it wasn't let me find a job and let me move for the job, because we know that once the job goes, you got to still like the place if you don't want to move.
Yes.
Right. And so it was really a combination of both. So we started with life first. You know, my husband is also an entrepreneur. So we also kind of knew that we'd probably be working remotely anyway. Mm-hmm. So we can just kind of work remotely from anywhere as long as the environment is open and there are other entrepreneurs there where we feel like we will have community. And so basically we came up with a bunch of cities that we thought fit those criteria, starting with cities that we had some sort of previous relationship with. So we looked at London where we'd lived before. I think the top ones were London, Berlin, Amsterdam, and Milan, because of the Italian cities, we felt like that was probably the best Italian city for us. Mm-hmm. And then we visited the cities and kind of saw them and thought about, you know, what would life be here like? What are the schools like? You know, is there good public schooling? Is there a good environment? And we had initially settled on Amsterdam and then came as a family. So we essentially presented it to the kids and we said, look, your dad and I have got, you know, we basically said, we've gone through this process. We think that Amsterdam is the best city for us as a family, but we want you all to be part of the decision. So we're going to spend a week there and kind of see as a family what we think. And so on our way to the US before Christmas, we spent an extra week in Amsterdam, I guess a year and a half ago at this point, and also ended up looking at all the little towns around Amsterdam. Yeah. And so, well, not so little towns. And we actually ended up in Utrecht, which is south of Amsterdam. So we're like, oh, this actually is everything we want. Like, it's a great city. It's the right size. You can bike everywhere. We want to be able to buy a house with a garden. And so we can afford something here. So yeah, so I mean, so it's not perfect, right? Like, as we were talking about before we started recording, I hate learning Dutch. It's the worst. It is not what I want to be spending my time doing, but it was the major downside of everything, you know, everything else being aligned. And, you know, as we'll be here, I'm sure there will be things that we don't like. But we know at this point that that's everywhere. And so far so good. And if we, you know, if in, you know, a couple years we're like, this doesn't work for us anymore, then we'll move. But at that point, we'll feel okay with moving.
Yeah.
Right. Because it won't feel right anymore. But yeah, right now it feels right. But having done all of the values work, the purpose work, all of that, I think really helped feel good about moving somewhere for the life we want to live. You know, I also did like some visioning exercises of what my life to look like in 10 years. And I think that has really helped me get to a place where it's not about a job or a company or a title. It's about us as a family unit. It's about me knowing who I am and knowing what I want. And that work has also helped me, you know, figure out what I want to do career-wise, right? And what I want that to look like. So it's just, yeah, it's been a good, hard process that's not done yet, but I feel like it'll never be done, right? But like I'm on a path that feels good.
It's amazing to hear you lay all that out, Laura. And I love the intentionality, and you had the spreadsheets, and you also were really intentional about saying, look, based on what I know about myself, my values, my purpose, where can I live in alignment with those? And yeah, there's just something there, and putting, you know, and saying what's going to work for us as a family, not like, where can I get the best job? Where can I get, you know, make the most money? Where all these external factors, which, I mean, okay, they're part of life and there's practical things, we have to pay bills, et cetera. But it's like, wow, what a beautiful way to approach designing your life, the life with your family, in a way that is incredibly thoughtful. And it's also really cool to hear, and I want to hear more about how your work is shaping up right now, but like, that's a really beautiful thing to hear too, of like, okay, we prioritize these things and the other pieces are also falling into place.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people get there earlier than I got there, right? Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, I was just reflecting as you were talking. I was like, yeah, a lot of people make decisions on what kind of life they want to have much earlier than I did. So I guess everyone goes at their own pace, right? And everyone gets there. I don't know if I ever saw myself moving around as much as I have, nor did I ever see myself settling somewhere.
Mm.
So it's been really interesting, you know, and I do think I probably would have, you know, my husband has moved around a lot, and he has a huge comfort with moving. He moved around a lot as a kid. I had a very stable household. My parents still live in the house that I grew up. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting to kind of reflect on all the moves have felt great when they happened and they've felt right. But I'm like, would I really have moved around as much if I was with somebody who wasn't as comfortable with moving? Like, maybe I would have come to some of these realizations earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's been a little bit of frustration of like, oh my gosh, another move, like here we go again. But also I can't really see it any other way.
Yes. And that, I mean, it brings me full circle back to your initial comments of being kind to yourself too.
Yes. Yes.
You know, because that whole like, well, if these elements were different, would I have gotten here differently and sooner? And like, I mean, we can kind of really just drive ourselves crazy with all of those questions of like, okay, but you know, if I'm kind to myself every step along the way, I was doing the best I could in that moment, being the best dressed I could in that moment.
Right. And that's the best we can do, right? Is the best in that moment. But yeah, you're right. It is really easy to beat yourself up about anything, really.
Well, and noticing, you know, other people get to where you feel like you are sooner, I would say. Also, there's a lot of people that get there much later and maybe sometimes never in life too. Right. So
yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. And I think that goes back also to that piece of like appreciating every day. Right. Yeah. So I can go back and I can appreciate every day in the past. And so if I can do that and I can be kind to myself, it makes when the frustration comes in of like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, my 10-year-old or 9-year-old is having a hard time learning Dutch. I can't believe I moved her to this country and I'm doing, you know, it's my fault that she's having a hard time because I moved her to this country. Right. I can kind of work myself back and be like, it's okay. Right. We all gained a lot from these past experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know where my kids say they're from, but we'll work on that. I'm like, yeah. I don't know where you're from, kid. I have no idea.
It's an interesting question. And there's almost a part of me, and this is a whole nother conversation we could have another time of, you know, when you do, you know, for you, you've got citizenship in multiple countries. You've moved around a lot. Your husband's moved around a lot. Identity and where we are, quote unquote, from, as the world has become so much more global, almost becomes a moot point. It's kind of like, I'm from humanity. Like that's where, you know, and I don't know, like, again, this is a rabbit hole we could go down, but it is kind of.
Yeah, we could definitely have a whole other hour conversation on that. Yeah. Because there's been a whole lot of, for myself, a whole lot of searching on that piece as well. And that's what my like 20s was really about.
Mm.
I think was that identity piece, like, where am I from? What culture am I aligned with? Where do I want to be? So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, you'll have to come back for part two and we can dive into some of those conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Laura, before we wrap up our conversation today, I'd love to hear what you're doing now and the work that you're doing and whatever you'd be willing to share.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I think part of this values purpose searching was kind of what do I want to do now? And when I really thought about my purpose, I thought about helping others be the best versions of themselves. And when I thought back at previous work, you know, previous jobs, one of the parts that I really loved the most was helping my team grow, helping them see their strengths and what they're really good at, helping to design the roles that made the most sense for them and would get the most out of them. And I just got so much value and joy from that process. And I really love knowing people. Like, I'm one of those people who, like, probably after like two meetings, I'm going to be like, so how's your mom? Like, what's going on? Let's talk about your childhood, right? Like, I'm one of those people who really likes to feel like I know people on that way. And if I don't, it can be really hard to connect. And so as I was reflecting on that, it led me to coaching. And I think part of our work together also kind of helped me understand what coaching is. And I, you know, so I did do a coaching course and now I'm coaching people on where to move, kind of some of these life things. And then also, as I mentioned, have a new co-founder for helping small businesses or solopreneurs increase their revenue. So I'm working with my partner who is has like a marketing and retail and finance background. And so we're bringing together kind of my strategy and coaching and her coaching and marketing background to help solopreneurs feel a little less alone on this journey of solopreneurness and really kind of help them figure out how do they increase their revenue and be more intentional with their work. And we're working specifically with women and purpose-driven entities. So that has felt really good to do that. So we're starting that together. And then I'm also coaching people on where to move. And then I'm also working with startups in Rwanda still. So kind of doing a lot of this with the intention of using those coaching skills in what I do next, because I like that part of working with people. And it's been super fun to kind of hone those skills more. And we'll kind of, we'll see where that goes. But there was a lot of list making of like, okay, what do I like to do? What fields do I like to work in? And so directionally, these projects, these businesses feel good.
That's fantastic. And I mean, what an amazing support for people too, because I mean, that decision, especially when we open ourselves up to the choices, and it's not just, oh, I've got a job, so I'm going to move here, but where do I want to live and place myself in the world? Those can be enormous questions. Even, I mean, being from the US, even if I just look at the US and where do I don't even know where. I mean, I own a house in Tennessee, but it's like I grew up in Pennsylvania, but where would I want to live if I were going to move back and stay? I'm like, I don't know, right? Like, and so having a process to kind of explore that and find a place of alignment, be it in a country of origin or somewhere else in the world, just think is incredibly valuable.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating. It's the process for an individual figuring out what they want next for the phase of their life, and a solo entrepreneur figuring out what's next for their business. The process at the beginning is like the same.
Yeah,
you have to figure out what your vision is for your life. You have to figure out what your purpose is, right? If you don't know those things, it is so hard to figure out the rest with intentionality. Sure, you can go somewhere, right? And probably be happy. But if you're somebody who really is going to continue to question, then do the groundwork now, right? Figure out what you really care about in life and what brings you joy and what your strengths are. And that's both from a personal, you know, should I move to Europe or America, or should I move to this town or that town? And what should I do with my business?
Yes. Yes. And being a solopreneur for a number of years in my own life, I resonate with that too, of, you know what, sometimes it's really hard. And sometimes, you know, like what is it that keeps me going through those hard times? It's what you're saying of like really knowing why I'm doing this, how this aligns mm-hmm. with me, working with clients. Like some clients come along and I realize, oh, that's not going to work.
Right.
Okay. That was one project done. Check. And now let's move on. Right. And so, yeah, everything you're saying resonates very, very deeply.
It's so easy just to fall into this momentum, mm-hmm. right? And so hopefully you get to a point where you don't crash and burn like I did, and that help gets you out of the momentum, or, you know, hopefully you kind of can just get out of the momentum through listening to stuff and reading stuff. But mm-hmm. yeah, so whether it's personal or business, I think all of this work is so helpful, but it's nonstop and it's hard.
Yeah. And coming back to the theme of the podcast, it's difficult work, but it can be less difficult when we find other people who are helping us get through it and having conversations and sharing, you know, even just you sharing your story, people can listen and be like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one. I'm not going crazy. It's not just me. It's not a magic wand. It doesn't make it easy, but it does certainly make it less difficult.
I think acknowledging that it's difficult makes it less difficult.
Yeah.
Because I think we expect it to be easy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so when you just say, oh yeah, this is hard. Everyone's like, oh yeah, it is hard. Like this, you know, it is hard. But every day when I see I work a little bit closer and I know myself a little bit better, I can see the value that I'm getting from it.
Yeah.
Right. When we expect things to nothing. I don't know. I'm sure there's a quote out there about how nothing worthwhile is easy. And I believe that.
Yeah. And the other thing that comes to my mind with you saying that too, is it's really easy to look at other people, and social media really highlights this, and like, oh, they've got it all figured out. I'm the only one struggling. Why can't my business be successful like everybody else's? And, right. You know, I'm at an interesting point in my life right now where work-wise, life is nice, and I've got, you know, a variety of projects and work that I do that's really meaningful and fulfilling. And I have people say like, oh my goodness, it's amazing what you're doing. And, you know, there's a part of me that just wants to receive that and say yes. And then there's another part of me that wants to say, and I have worked so hard. It's taken me like years, like the first 5 to 7 years were really, really hard. And it's just now kind of like paying off and stuff. And I have to sometimes just like hold that inside, because people don't always want all of that information. Right.
That's the flip side of my, like, tell me your life story. It's like, not everyone wants to tell me their life story.
Yes. Yes. But again, just that, like, okay, again, we can look at people from the outside and think they've got it all figured out, but it's like, yes. Well, what has been the journey and what's been the work behind it? And again, we're all on the journey.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having this platform to hear other people's stories and kind of be on the journey with other people.
It is.
So yeah, I have gained so much from podcast conversations. Yeah, they make me feel less alone. We all just need to feel less alone.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. And Laura, if somebody wants to reach out to you, I can put contact information in the show notes, but is it okay if they reach out? Is there a particular place, your website or somewhere that you like to reach out?
Yeah. They can either find me through LinkedIn. I'm like one of the only Laura Barringers on there. Or they can find me from the new business, which is www.lauraandsarah.com. Cool. Sarah with an H.
Excellent. I will put links in the show notes as well. But thank you so much for sharing. Yeah. And let's do this again.
I would love that. I would love that. It's been so nice to talk to you.
Same. Thank you for listening to today's conversation and episode of the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. Editing is done by Joseph Burdock. Artwork is by Emma Burdock. I'd be honored if you took a moment to share this with a friend and or leave us a review. Together, I truly believe we can make life less difficult.